Now, Dork Uncorked with Ron Phillips and Ryan Price on CFAX 1070.
Hello, everybody. Hello, it's time. It's time for the Dork Uncorked to share his wisdom with all of us. It's my favorite part of the week, and we're here now. Rod Phillips is the Dork Uncorked. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm looking at this puddle of wisdom on the corner here that I think I've lost all my wisdom.
Did it evaporate?
It did. Like, oh. I didn't even hit my head, so there wasn't a lot there to begin with.
Obviously. Oh, no. This is Dork Uncorked. Maybe you've never heard this before. Rod, what is this show all about?
It's all about what to drink that will blow your socks off, yet not blow your wallet away.
Yeah, that is the core of what this whole all started as many years ago when you set out to, well, not just do this show, but I think didn't you start this thing as like a blog?
Yeah. So I was, at the time, I was the buyer for a chain of stores, and therefore I had access to, you know, a lot of samples, number one, and my own liquor store. So number two. So one of the things that really hit me was, because a lot of the people who were reviewing wines were talking about wines that were like $40, $50 a bottle, right? And it was great, and you know, for those of us who are interested in those kind of things. But it's not didn't really serve a purpose to, you know, to the everyday person, including, you know, the everyday person. I shouldn't say that, is it? Because I don't know about you, but my budget for $50 wines is pretty rare that comes up. So
that's like I ask for somebody to buy that for me for Christmas. That's my $50 wine experience.
Exactly. And so so it dawned on me that I should probably, because there's some great wines, between $10 to $20, but there's also thousands of wines between $10 to $20. And there's this, I don't know if it's, I guess it's a human behavioral study that talked about paralysis by analysis. And the same thing, you know, too much selection creates paralysis. And we've talked about this before. You walk into a store, you see a wall of wine. And unless you know a good deal about how to differentiate them, there's a sense of anxiety that comes over you. Like, what do I choose? Like, I felt this really intensely, even though, like, I've got a good history, a decent history in wine knowledge. I was in what is reported to be the world's oldest wine store in Rome. So this store has been around since, I think, 800, and it's got all these nooks and crannies and caverns, and there's literally wines everywhere. It's not like it's not clean most of the place. There's like dust on things. So we walk into this store, our host says, find whatever you like, and we'll buy it, and we're walking through this place and just in awe of some of the vintages and how far back. Like, there was wines from 1800 and, you know, some German Rieslings from 1700, and it stuffed in little corners, right? And I go, how do you choose? Like, how do you choose? Because you're sitting there with this idea that I got to choose something that's got to be great, especially if it's, if I'm paying for it, I want something great, especially with all these options. But what do I choose? And that is, I think, a common experience that people have when they walk into a store, is that you literally see this wall of wine or wall of craft beer or whatever it is and go, how do I know how to make the right choice? And that's where the idea for Dork Uncorked came up. I started a blog that I would review various wines that between $10 to $20 that drew my attention, like blew my socks off, because it's not hard for that $50 bottle of wine, as it should, blow your socks off. But 10 to 20, that's becoming a tall ask. And that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, it started as a blog. Now here we are on the radio many years later. It's the history of Dork Uncorked. Look at that, Rod. What a great start to today's show. I love this. So there you go. That is what this is all about. And the backstory. If you've never heard our show before, hopefully you stick around and join us for today. Now, today, Rod, we've got a few things to do. It is going to be Thanksgiving next weekend. Canadian Thanksgiving, of course.
The only real Thanksgiving. Yeah. I mean, come on.
We've got, I'm sure we've got some American listeners, and if you are, well, you know, just save this one, save the podcast of this one, which you can find on the website, cfax1070.com. So save it and listen to it in November. But for all of us, Canadians, so we're going to do a little bit of Thanksgiving. We always do this, just sort of talk about what's going to be on Rod's table, how's he going to pair with his dinner, what's exciting him, but also just some of the challenges of pairing a wine to this kind of dinner. And if you haven't listened to us talk about this before, it does get quite fascinating how like a big roast dinner with all kinds of different things can provide a challenge. So we're going to get to that coming up. But before we start, I have some follow-up to last week's episode, Rod.
Oh.
Can I tell you a story?
Oh, please.
Okay.
Yes, do tell.
So on the Sunday of last weekend, our show airs at noon on Sundays, 5 p.m. on Saturdays on CFAX, noon on Sundays. So later on that Sunday, I had a whole bunch of my in-laws over for dinner. So the my mother and father-in-law, my great aunt-in-law, no, I guess she's aunt-in-law, my kid's great aunt. Anyways, it's complicated. The nephews are over. There's a whole bunch of them, and we're making a roast dinner for all of these families, family members. And then Aunt Barb says, oh, I was listening to your Dork on Cork show on the way over here, and you were talking about that mix that you were discussing of the white wine and the pineapple juice. So I was like, I've got it right here. So I busted out my little carton of Costco pineapple juice. If you know Costco, you know what I'm talking about. They come in like a little bunch of Tetra Paks of pineapple juice. I happened to have picked up a cheap bottle of white wine just for such an occasion. I mixed them together. And let me tell you, Rod, Aunt Barb was impressed.
Oh, I see a brand developing. Maybe the real catchy name for the brand is Aunt Barb's wine cocktail.
I like it. Thumbs up from Aunt Barb. Mother-in-law liked it too. So
wow.
I had two wins there, Rod. Just letting you know.
Okay.
Cheap white wine and pineapple juice. You got cheap white wine. You're like, it's fine, but it's not exciting. I don't know how this ended up in my house. Somebody brought it over. You know, maybe it's not my thing. You want to know what to do with it? Throw a little pineapple juice in there and please there your in-laws. Go. It's my story.
Oh, I see a future where the guys at White Claw are going to come knocking on your door saying, please buy us. You're like 20 times the size of us.
I should stop talking about it, actually. I'm giving away my good ideas.
Absolutely, because it's really complex, right? It's a really, really complex mixture.
I don't think I've sold Rod yet on the beauty of this cocktail. So, well,
the weekend is coming.
Okay, so there you go. Just follow up from last week and the pineapple and wine segment, which was a bit of fun. Okay, so that aside now, another bit of business to clear up from last weekend on Dork Uncorked. We did a feature on some Greek wines you have never heard of, and the fact that we're hoping to review some of these and talk about them in the future. So just to remind everybody of what we're doing, in case you want to follow along for that future episode, remind us of what those wines were.
Yeah, the red is Agrotiko. That's the grape that makes the wine. So there's lots of wineries in Greece, obviously, and in the Macedonian Peloponnese region, we're talking about the red grape being Agrotiko. The white grape is Moscofolero. And I had made the promise last week to try through some of these wines and come back with reviews on each of them. Sadly, the samples never arrived, so I never got a chance to get out and get them. So I'm going to push that off to maybe next week,
the
week after.
Which means there's more time, and I want to find some too. So, okay, one more time. Hit me with the names. Agrotiko?
Agrotiko is the name of the red, and Moscofolero is the name of the white.
Right. A couple of Greek wines that are very obscure, at least in this part of the world. and it's kind of a fun adventure. If you want to take part, you know, maybe get some in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to try to do the same thing, and then you can follow along when Rod gets to those reviews. And we always like to hear from our listeners. We haven't done this in a while, but we do have many ways you can contact Dork Uncorked. There is simply dorkuncorked@gmail.com, right?
Yep, indeed.
And then on social media, there's @DorkUncorked on your Instagrams and Twitters. You can write to us there. So if you try one of these Greek wines, let us know what you think. We'd love to work that into our review of them when we do it. And let us know what you think about pineapple juice and white wine together. You know, is this a great idea? Is this horrifying? Are you mad at me?
No, I'm not mad at you at all.
Listeners.
This is how innovation happens.
If the listeners are mad at me, they can write at Dork Uncorked and let us know.
And what I'd really like to see is anybody who's out there who is on TikTok, make that combination and TikTok about it.
Okay. There we go.
Tell us your thoughts.
Yeah. That's because we love to share listener feedback on the show. We just forget to mention that we do that sometimes and give out those addresses. So @DorkUncorked on your social medias, like the Twitter, like the Instagram, or DorkUncorked@gmail.com if you like the old fashioned email, which I do. I like to email. I feel like that feels good. So, okay, Rod, we've taken care of all the business that we had to clear through. Let's take our first break. When we come back, looking ahead to Thanksgiving. Turkey time is approaching. It is almost here. At least Canadian Thanksgiving is almost here. And here on Dork Uncorked, we always like to look ahead to these meals, whether it be Thanksgiving, whether it be Christmas, whether it be Easter, and just talk about the wine pairings. Because I think, Rod, this is super useful information for a couple of reasons. Maybe you're hosting and you got some people coming over and you just want to make sure you pair the right wine with your turkey dinner. Or maybe you are going to a Thanksgiving dinner and you don't want to show up empty-handed. It's a pretty easy thing to do. You pick up a nice bottle of wine to bring. But you think that's an easy, simple thing. Here's where Dork Uncorked comes in to help you. Not all wines are going to go with whatever you're going to be eating at that Thanksgiving dinner. There's a lot to think about, so we like to talk about it ahead of these meals. So we're going to do it here, Rod, the Thanksgiving discussion. Let's do it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is much like Christmas, and we'll probably revisit this around Christmas, is that, you know, the traditional Canadian Thanksgiving dinner includes turkey, probably some starchy potatoes, maybe some turnips, some peas, some carrots, Brussels sprouts, cranberry sauce. All of these things are all on the table and usually all on the plate, including gravy. You put that all on one plate and, man, you've got a cacophony of, you know, not only fats, but also proteins, starches, sugars, acids, sugars, again, sugars. There's more sugars in there. And you've got all these things going on at the same time. Now, typically, when you're pairing a wine, you're looking at the one main ingredient of the particular meal. So in a classic winemaker's dinner, you wouldn't be given a plate that has all that stuff on there. You'd be given a plate with the roast turkey with maybe a cranberry reduction sauce and maybe some garnish, that, you know, vegetable garnish on the side. And the wine would be paired with the turkey. The wine wouldn't be, then the next dish may be the Brussels sprouts. Well, then you're going to have the Brussels sprouts paired with a specific wine. Well, I don't know about you. I'm sure that you have those kind of dinners, especially when Aunt Barb's coming over.
Yeah, exactly.
where it's like a dozen courses, each with a specific wine. Well, yeah, typically we condense them all into one plate, and usually I have two glasses in front of me just because I like to go balance back and forth. But one of the most difficult things to do is to find the right wine that's going to work with all that going on. And that's why it is imperative to have these kind of conversations.
Look, so tip number one is go full dork and break your Thanksgiving dinner into courses of each individual element. Here's the potato course. Here's the turkey course. Here's the Brussels sprouts course. And, you know, here's the pumpkin pie. And each of them will have its own wine paired with it. Because obviously that's how everybody is going to do their Thanksgiving.
But of course.
But for those,
of course, and everybody, yeah, everybody's got all the Riedel glasses to go with it too, right?
Yeah,
you know, like you got, yeah, you got the sparkling wine flute, you've got the aromatic white glass, you've got a full-bodied white glass, you've got the burgundy glass, and you've got the Cabernet or the claret glass, and then of course you've got dessert wine glasses. So, and everybody's got those in crystal, right? Doesn't everybody?
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? For those people who aren't, for those weirdos who are going to serve their entire Thanksgiving dinner all together on one plate covered in the gravy, maybe we should talk to those people here. And
okay,
and help them out.
All right.
Sorry, well, we're being a little extra cheeky
and
today.
Hopefully, yeah, and I probably shouldn't betray this, but typically one of the glasses that's on my table is always a mason jar, and that mason jar is usually with the most versatile wine I have to serve. So it's not that fun fancy. It is just that it's a mason jar. So not a Riedel glass, but a mason jar. How about that?
Okay. All right. I guess we'll. We'll allow it.
Okay. Well, if you can do pineapple and white wine.
you can have your wine in a mason jar. No, actually, honestly, I love wine in a mason jar. Ever since I went to this restaurant in Seattle that you and I've talked about, the restaurant doesn't exist anymore, but it was an Italian place. And if you ordered wine, all you got was the wine in a mason jar. It was like, here's the red in a mason jar. And I was like, this is great. This feels like I'm sitting in like some rustic Italian place drinking a mason jar full of the red. So I do it at my house. My wife and I will have our little mason jars of wine. So I'm with you. I'm with you, Rod.
Yeah, well, there you go. And that restaurant, that's a good segue here, because that restaurant, that wine has to work with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. It has to work with everything. So so like Thanksgiving. So what I'm going to say, if you want to depending on the number of people, let's start there. Maybe how many bottles do you need for the number of people? Typically we will have anywhere between 10 to 12 people around the table, and I like to have one bottle for every three people, so I'll need like four bottles. So that's the typical math that I do. I like to have that a balance between reds and whites, and I will usually sponsor some sparkly wine to start with. So as everybody's getting ready for dinner and you can smell the turkey roasting and all those things going on, I like to start that meal with some sparkling. Now, typically the sparkling I think goes best because it prepares your palate for what is going to come next. I typically don't have Prosecco because I find that often is a little too sweet for what is to happen next. I really like Cava from Spain. And my favorite Cava from Spain for this purpose is $14.99, and it's called Cordonu Clásico. It is, you can find it everywhere. Again, it's inexpensive. And chill it down, but it is a beautiful glass of sparkling wine. It's the Cordonu Clásico, $14.99. Serve that to begin with. Now you're transitioning over to the table, and you're getting sat down. And of course, the guests are going, oh, where would you like me to sit? And you go through all that process. Everybody sits down, and they've got, you know, at least one mason jar in front of them. I typically walk around and say, would you prefer red or white? That's really the only choices that I give people, because the wine selection has been pared down to what is going to be most versatile. In many ways, I will go with my white selection. It will avoid things with high acidity. So when I say high acidity, I'm talking about really crisp, you know, ring your mouth out with acidity. Sauvignon Blanc is usually a no-go at my table. A go is Chardonnay. That is often one of the best ways. And you got, because there's such a great selection of Chardonnay, you can usually find some really good ones between $10 to $20. If you want to go into that $24 range, the Bread and Butter out of California is fantastic. The Chateau Ste. Michelle is another brilliant one from Washington State. And then get Slow Press is a great one from California. But also look into BC. If you can find something under $20, that's great. But Chile often provides some great Chardonnays in that $14, $15 range. Connoisseur is a really good Chardonnay. It comes from the region Valparaiso, so it's a little bit cooler climate, which is what Chardonnay likes. So alternatives to Chardonnay, if you really don't like Chardonnay, you could go with either a Viognier or with a Pinot Gris. Now, I'm not a big fan of Pinot Gris, but if you can somehow get a hold of the Alderley Pinot Gris, that is tremendous. That is a great pairing for the Thanksgiving dinner. But other ones, you can there's any Pinot Gris or Pinot Grigio, $14-$15 ought to do. Stay away from the ones that are the bottled in Canada ones. So these are the ones that are not grown here, but they are imported in bladder and sold here. They're typically that $9 range that is separated from the VQA section. Stay away from those because they'll have way too much sugar. You're looking for a Pinot Gris and even a Chardonnay in that 12.5% to 13.5% alcohol. That typically has the body and the balance that you're going to look for. Now that's white. Reds are a whole different animal. This year, I'm going to go with a couple different things. One of them is going to be Pinot Noir. Now, Pinot Noir is not everybody's first choice, and primarily because you often are trying to find, Pinot Noir is usually a premium grape. In other words, a lot of good Pinot Noir goes for that $25 to $35 range. And so you can go and get La Crema. That's a beautiful one. Han is another excellent Pinot Noir that in that price range. A lot of the wines out of Kim Crawford, as an example, of Pinot Noir out of New Zealand. So New Zealand Pinot Noirs are great. Again, in the mid-20s. But what you really want is a Pinot that is going to create a convert to Pinots. Much like I know, Ryan, that you're a convert to Pinots because of a Pinot that you tried that was in the price range.
Oh, yeah.
And the characteristic in that Pinot was that silky finish, right? It was so luxurious that made you a convert to it. Pinot Noir also has enough body, it has the acidity, and it has, if you can find that lovely silky finish, it has the finish that will enjoy a plate of Thanksgiving dinner. So typically I would go with the organic connoisseur Pinot Noir. That's around $14-$15. There is one out there, and I think I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, that is going to be arriving in stores in the next couple weeks. That is a very short, but it is probably the best Pinot under $20 I've tasted in years. But I'll get into that one in a few minutes. But yeah, go looking in. You could also look for Portillo out of Argentina. That is another great Pinot under $20. But so there you go. There's Connoisseur Organic Pinot and Portilla Pinot out of Argentina. The other way I'm going to go is either Carmenere or Merlot.
Ooh, because those ones tend to be, like they're big. They've got some nice fruit. They tend to have softer tannins than the Cabernet Sauvignon. Is that kind of where you're going with that?
Bang on.
Okay.
Bang on. Yeah, exactly. So last week, my pick of the week was the H3 Cabernet, which is a beautiful wine, and it has relatively soft, supple tannins. But the Merlot version, the H3 Merlot, any of those kind of Washington State Merlot and that Columbia Crest, really nice and juicy, good spice to it, but they also have some structure to them that will work with Thanksgiving dinner. From Carmenere, you're going to go into the Chilean section. And you're going to find the Falernia Carmenere is spectacular. I think it's in the $20 range now. Frontera has a really nice Carmenere. And Carmenere is the juicy cousin to Merlot. And I won't get into the story how it was refound in Chile. But when you have a Carmenere Merlot blend, it is big and it is juicy and it is just luxurious. So my reds would be Pinot and Carmenere or Merlot. My whites would be Viognier, Pinot Gris, or Chardonnay. I'm probably going to go Chardonnay. And to start everything off, I'm going to give a lovely classic Cordonnier Cava.
Okay, so one more time, we're talking Thanksgiving dinner. We're talking the complexities that are trying to pair a wine to all of the different flavors and all of the different things that might rub a wine the wrong way that can be found on that mixed plate of all sorts of stuff that you find at Thanksgiving. So one more time, take us through those wine options you're really thinking of. And I know you mentioned a lot out there, but let's try to condense this just into some quick little bite size. So you had that Cordon U Classico Sparkling as an option you just mentioned there. So that's one.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
For the whites.
And now into the whites, I would go Chardonnay, and I typically go to Washington State, shall we say, Michelle. California, if you want to go up a little bit, go to Bread and Butter Chardonnay. If you want to go down a little bit in that low between 10 to 15 range, go into the Chilean options, and you'll find some really good wines in there. Connoisseurs is one of the better ones. Santa Rita makes some good wines from Chardonnay as well. Pinot Gris, you could go to BC. That's going to be in that $20 range. Alderley makes a great Pinot Gris. Highly recommend that one. But again, that's in the $25 range. But Pinot Gris, you're gonna be spending a little bit more on that. Viognier, on the other hand, you can get a great Viognier from Yalumba, which is an Australian wine. That is probably the best Viognier between $10 to $20, and that is the Yalumba Viognier. In terms of reds, there's two grapes I'm focusing on, and that is Pinot and Merlot. And I know I said two grapes. Carmenere fits into that Merlot thing quite nicely. So Pinot Noir, Connoisseur Organic Pinot Noir, around $14. If you want to go a little bit over 20, go with Han out of California, or Bread and Butter. You can also go into the New Zealand ones and go with Kim Crawford. For Merlot, I highly recommend the H3 Merlot out of Washington State. That's probably would be my first choice, followed by the Columbia Crest, again, out of Washington State. And then if you want to go with some Carmenere, find the Falernia Carmenere out of Chile. And there you go. You've got it set. You are done.
So much to do. Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, wine shopping, you got a whole week before Thanksgiving. We got some time. So there we go. Let's. Any other thoughts on Thanksgiving, or are we done with that topic for today?
Well, I think the great omission that I just made here.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I'm giving you space to correct yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody needs to go to Costco and get some pineapple, and then get a big box of Pinot Gris or Pinot Grigio or whatever it is, and then who cares about the reds and the whites?
Yeah. Maybe that's the route. I know. I know. I feel like it would pair well.
Oh, absolutely. Go make yourself an Aunt Barb.
Oh, if you serve it at Thanksgiving and your relatives throw you out of your own Thanksgiving dinner because they're so appalled, do send us a message at Dork Uncorked.
Yeah.
And let us know how that goes over.
Post it on Instagram or TikTok. I'd love to see it. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Thanksgiving 2022. There's our look at that. We'll leave it for now. We'll come back with some, you already teased this a bit, Rod. You have tried a wine, a Pinot Noir, speaking of which, I'm pretty sure you said it was a Pinot Noir, right?
Yeah,
you did. Yeah. And you mentioned that this was a knock your socks off moment. So I think we're going to get to that coming up next here on Dork Uncorked. Okay, time for some reviews. Rod has some new wines he's tried. He's going to talk about on the show. But before we get to that, and you did mention you had a Pinot Noir that you really wanted to talk about. But I thought before we get there, the story behind this wine got me thinking about something. Because you were talking about how this is a wine. I won't reveal the name yet for you, Rod. Well, one, I don't know what it is because you haven't revealed it to me. But we won't reveal the name here yet. But you were saying before we started recording the show today that, you tried this wine. It's hopefully going to get into the market because it's so good. And that there's only like a single agent who's representing it. So it's, it's a work in progress kind of thing. And that got me thinking of, this whole thing happening behind the scenes that we don't even know of when we go to a wine store. You walk into the store, there's a bunch of options on the shelf, and you pick what you want and you leave. But, how often do you think of how that wine got there and why that wine got there? Why that wine? How did that, out of all the billions of wines that are being made all over the world, why are these ones the ones that got here? And it can actually be an interesting answer to the story. There's a lot of different answers, but in some cases, there's a person, a rep, a salesperson who's in your region, who's representing a bunch of wines, and they're trying their darndest to get that wine on the shelf. And that's the case with this one you want to talk about. So I thought maybe it'd be a fun story just to sort of talk about what that process is like of trying to get a wine on a shelf.
Yeah, well, it is, over the last couple of years, it's become even more challenging. I mean, we've heard in the news all the supply chain issues. We've heard about, containers not, moving around the world and trucking issues. Last year, we had a flood that, cut off the lower mainland and the island from the rest of the known Canadian country. And so there's been lots of challenges recently. And one of the things that has been a long held thing is how a wine and or, it could be a beer, it could be a spirit, it could be anything, gets imported into BC. Now, you would think that wouldn't it be great, because I'm sure you go on to Facebook or whatever that you see all these products on there that are being advertised and promoted to go to direct to consumer. Click here to order, like whether it's shoes or whatever it is, you can click on anything and they'll drop ship it to anywhere in the world. Well, beverage alcohol typically doesn't work like that unless you're in the EU, and then or the UK, it works great. But here in North America, one of the things that we are still dealing with is the hangover from Prohibition, whereby alcohol sales are very, very controlled. And that stems from when that product hits the, from the registration of the importer saying, I want to bring this wine in, to the supplier saying, I'm willing to ship it to you, and then the freight forwarders all the way along to get it here. So I'll go through this process. The first step is that somebody needs to want to bring this wine in, and we'll use wine as the example. Typically, the way the world has always worked is that an importing agent will be likely traveling somewhere, maybe comes from somewhere, has some contacts in the business, maybe ran a restaurant. Typically, that's where an importing agent will come from. And they will have found a wine or a brand or a particular region that they want to focus on. And they will make contacts with some suppliers in those regions. Once they've been able to strike a deal, they then go and register those products with the local liquor board, in this case, the BCLDB. That registration then goes to a point whereby one of the gatekeepers at the LDB will state whether or not the importer can bring this in. And if they can bring it in, they're going to issue a purchase order. And that purchase order goes back to the agent, who sends that off to the freight forwarder, who sends that off to the supplier. And trucks are arranged, ships are arranged, trains are arranged, all the way into getting into the Port of Vancouver via either train or by boat. In so doing, it hits a bonded warehouse. And so in other words, it goes into customs, whereby excise taxes, import taxes, all those kind of taxes are cleared. And then the product has to go through the clearing at the in the liquor board. So the liquor board has to say, yep, this is the product that we ordered, this is the price we ordered, here's your stamp of approval, it is now active. So once it goes from now it's able to be active, that's when the importing agent, who is responsible for the sales in the market, has to go and create a market for this particular product. So up until this point, it has taken anywhere in a normal situation, anywhere from 4 weeks to 8 weeks for that product to go that whole process. Most recently, in the last couple of years, that has been doubled from 8 weeks to as many as 16 to 20 weeks before it is ready to have a market made for it. But that may be a long period of time, but now the hard work starts. Currently in BC, there's roughly 90,000 products available for sale. Each one of those products has to have a market for it. There's an importing agent who wants to get on a shelf in a store, wants to get on a list in a restaurant. They are all vying for the attention of that particular buyer and in that store. And they have to make a case with that buyer to say why that product should be on that shelf. So for easy math, There, if you walk into a liquor store, your average liquor store will have about 3,000 different beverage alcohol items in it. There are, with 90,000, there is over 30 items for every space on a shelf. So the competition right now is really intense. So the most difficult thing that an importing agent is going to have to get past, the biggest wall you have to get past, is finding a buyer who is willing to listen to them, who's willing to give them their time to listen to what they have to say. And that is really difficult. Typically, in moments like this, it's the big guys who win out in that, who have either multiple reps or been around for a long time or carry brands like Bailey's and Smirnoff, all the things that you know about as it's just, a major product. Unfortunately, the vast majority of the 90,000 are imported by small agents, even one person agencies who have just fallen in love with a particular product and now they're trying to make a market for it. So the difficulty for them is to, get this exposed. So one of the tools that a number of them will use is they'll do samplings with various people in the market. Last week, I was lucky enough to receive samples for this particular wine that you referenced earlier. It just arrived at my front door. And, Pinot Noir is one of those things that I truly love, the rich, silky style. And I've often given my kingdom, we were blessed a few years back to have a $10 wine that did this. But those days have moved on, and I've really been looking for that under 20 Pinot that has all the characteristics of a $40 Pinot, but isn't 40 bucks. This wine is probably the best Pinot Noir that would retail under $20. So the retailer is going to add a margin in there. So this wine would likely sit on the shelf for $19.99, and it will be, when it is on the shelf, it will be the best Pinot Noir under 20 bucks in the market today. Now, sadly, this is a one-man band, this guy. So he has a tough time with getting the attention of the buyers. It is really a shame because there's lots of guys with his same story that there's some phenomenal products that just don't get the time of day because they're one voice in a crowd of 1,000. Anyway, the good news is with this Pinot Noir is that I reached out to a number of local retailers and said, boy, this is probably the best Pinot that you could retail under 20 bucks. There's obviously something in it for you as the retailer. You got to bring it in. And to the tune of about 20 cases are now on order and going to be shipped here to the local market. Cascadia was good enough to bring some in, so you'll find it at most of the Cascadia stores, probably in 2 or 3 weeks. But I guess most importantly, you'd like to know the name.
Yeah, I would.
It is Serbal, S-E-R-B-A-L. Pinot Noir from Argentina, and it comes from a region in Argentina called the Uco Valley, and the Uco Valley is way up in the Andes. It's one of the highest altitude wine growing regions in the world. Therefore, it's relatively cooler than a lot of other places, which Pinot Noir loves. And I remember first coming across this wine on a buying trip to Argentina, and it was a week had gone by. I tasted like 700 wines. An awful lot of them were Malbecs. There was a whole bunch of Bernardas, almost zero. In fact, I don't think there was, out of the whole list, there was zero Pinot Noirs. And my last night there, I went for dinner to this little restaurant around the corner from my hotel. And I saw a Pinot on the list, and I decided to order a bottle of it. And it was the Serbal Pinot Noir from Bodegas Adamisque. And it was absolutely tremendous. And I remember coming home and asking around, who's going to import this? Up until recently, nobody did, until this person, completely, aside from me, they didn't know about my desire for this wine. They ended up importing this. And it is, like I say, it's going to be hitting the shelves. It's called Serbal It's got like a tree on it with a yellow background on the label. You'll probably find it in the Argentine section or the Pinot Noir section. It's going to be retail around $19, and it is every bit a $40 Pinot Noir. So when you find it, buy it. I know that there is only a total of 40 cases available to the market in BC, so I suspect that those will go really quickly.
Man, this is peak Dork Uncorked right here. Here's a wine that it's going to be sparse, scarce, it's special, and you got the tip here that you should find it while you can.
Yeah.
I love it.
It was just so delicious. It was just so delicious. In the same package, there was, you know, we talked in the last segment about Carmenere. In the same package, there was a wine called Lorenzo and Gaspar, Carmenere Merlot. It would retail around $16. And it puts $25, $30 Merlots to shame. It is absolutely delicious. Comes out of Chile. I think you'll start to see it in the market. If you want to taste what this winery can do, you can go into a store and you'll find Ruben and Flora, or Ruben y Flora, which is a Cabernet blend. That will give you an indication of the quality of winemaking that this particular winemaker does. But the Lorenzo and Gaspar, you'll probably find it at Everything Wine soon enough. It is absolutely tremendous. It is like, man, that one package of samples was just wow.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. One more time. A couple of wines to watch out for. They're going to be hitting the market. They won't be around for long because it's not many of them. Lorenzo and Gaspar, the Carmenere Merlot, and what was the Pinot Noir? Was it Serbel?
Serbel. Yeah. Not a great name, obviously, because it doesn't really run. You know, doesn't really make you think of great Pinot Noir. But Serbel Pinot Noir, it's made by a winery by the name of Bodegas Adamisque, and it comes from the Uco Valley, and it will retail around $19.99, and it is a hot buy. It is a hot buy.
Okay. Look, we got to take our break because we're almost out of time. We need to fit in our pick of the week, as if you needed more after that. we'll be back in just a moment here on Dork Uncorked. You are listening to Dork Uncorked with me, Ryan, and him, the Dork Uncorked, Rod Phillips. And we're at the end of the show, Rod. We don't have a ton of time, but of course we have to do it. We have to do the pick of the week, where Rod brings us a wine that outperformed its price, really impressed him. And after what we've been hearing about already on the show, I have no idea what you're going to do with this, Rod.
For obvious reasons, it either would have been the Serbel or the Lorenzo and Gaspar, but you can't really find it. So that really kind of eliminates those ones.
Yeah, because those were heads up for wines that are coming soon, so watch out for them on the shelves. But what are you going to do with what we can find now?
Yeah, well, let's see. What can I do? Well, yeah, I got to say, a little while ago, I tried a whole host of different wines, including wines from France, Italy, BC, a little bit of everything from everywhere. There was a few wines that really stood out to me. One of which is this, I mentioned it earlier in the show. I think that given the weather that we're having right now, I mean, this is unseasonably warm and it's supposed to run right through the weekend. So if you're hearing this on Saturday or Sunday, I would go out and do this. This will also work, I might add. It will also work with your Costco Pinot pineapple juice. And it is the Cordonnier Classico Cava.
Aha.
Freshen up that palate. It's $14, $15, depending on where you shop. Chill it down. It is such a great refresher. It just makes your mouth feel alive. And if you add pineapple, you can invite Aunt Barb over. And Ryan over, and you can just have a pre-Thanksgiving get-together.
Love it. Okay. Well, that actually, but honestly, with Thanksgiving ahead, I think I'm going to make sure I've got a bottle of that around just in case.
Absolutely. That is the trick. I mean, everybody needs a palate refresher no matter when, and it's a great bowl of cava.
Right. Well, there's the show. It's Dork Uncorked. We will, I think we might actually be preempted by all of the football again next weekend, but we'll be back soon. So we'll see you then, Rod.
All righty. Looking forward to it.